Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Kuftet, and we're holding right at that Halakha Commission at the bottom of Kufchet. Amud Beit introduced us from the middle of the Baltic Sea, direct from Richie's Island. Here we go. And, of course, Zoom was very careful to put Doc right on top of him, which is why he did a good job today. And it's absolutely amazing. All right, so we have a Megaresh et Ha'isha, Mi'chzira. Okay, so now we're getting back into this interrelationship that we always saw between the question of Miyunim and Yibum, and now in a new way. So let's figure a situation. A guy gets divorced. He then remarries this woman. We were talking about in a case where she went and married somebody else. In between, she was a ketana. Let's forget about those complications. Just in general, what would you say about a case where a guy remarries his divorced wife, which is fine if she didn't marry anybody else, and then he dies, and he has a brother. Can that brother take her for Yibum? Is he mechuyev to take her for Yibum? Is he usher to take her for Yibum? How do we look at that? What is the issue? Let me just remind you what the issue is. We had this way before in the Masechet. It's called the Nisuim Rishonim Mapilim, or is it the Mitat Habal is Mapil? So if we say, and remember that this is so much a direct function of the issues that we've been discussing in utilizing Miyun as a probe into the nature of Yibum, is it that the moment that a woman gets married to a man, there is an innate relationship to the brother of that man because of the potential for Yibum, and that the creation of the relationship that ultimately may devolve out of this, where he dies in the end without children, was a function of the moment of the marriage? So do we say that the Nisuim HaRishonim Mapilim, or do we say, no, when a person dies at that moment, we analyze whether there is a need for Yibum. If there's a need for Yibum, then the Torah puts on the Chiyuv of Yibum. Now, there's a major difference between the two. Because if there was a potential status of Yibum at the moment that he first married her, and then they get divorced, how did that original idea actually end up taking form? What happened to the original Mapilim HaRishonim? They ended in divorce, which means that it has now been determined that she is Asura to the Yavam, because the potential for that relationship needed definition was defined by the divorce. If now he remarries her and he dies, what happens? Well, the brother comes to do Yibum. We say, I'm sorry, sir, this is your brother's divorcee. That is an Isser Kares. It is one of the Isurim that potters from Yibum, asers from Yibum, and takes off any relationship that you have to her. And therefore, there would be no Yibum in this case. And even though the guy is shouting, but wait, my brother just died. He was married to her, and he died without children. We'll say, well, I mean, and what if he would have been married to your wife's sister? You could have shouted from here to doomsday, but we can't let you marry your wife's sister. Well, neither can we allow you to marry your brother's divorcee. It's exactly as us as your wife's sister, you see. On the other hand, if the only time that the issue of Yibum is defined is at the moment of death, was he or was he not married to this woman? Yes, he was. Then is there a chiyuv of Yibum? Yes, there is. Okay, fine. So then let's start thinking about Yibum now. And then he would be chayiv. Now, it turns out that this is a major machlokas tanoim and is the first focus of our Mishnah. So, HaMegaresh et HaIsha. And then he remarries her. And then he dies. So, according to the Tanakama, she is muteret to the Yavam. Whereas Rabbi Elazar says, no, she's not. Because, basically, the moment they got divorced, that permanently defined her as Grushat Achiv. Clearly, because he holds Nisuim Rishonim Mapilim, which I think is already in the list of things that we published earlier, but I mention it again to make sure that you write it down and that it appears on Moshe's cards. Masha'inkin, the Reb Elazar, who holds that it's the Nisuim Rishonim. Now, how about in a case where he married a Yitoma, and the mother gave her Kiddushin? So this is a Kiddushin Darabbanan. He marries her, and then he divorces her, and then he takes her back. So we have the same situation, except one level down, because the whole thing is Darabbanan. She was married, she was begureshet, all midrabbanan, and then she got remarried midrabbanan. Okay, so we have the same machloka. So we'll see why we need to mention this even. But what we do is exactly the same. According to the Tana Kama, she's muteret to the Yavam, because we've simply replaced the first case with the equivalent case where everything is derabbanan. Rabbi Elazar, according to his approach, that nisuim arishonim mapilim, will say the same thing over here with the nisuim rishonim are mapilim midrabbanan. And now she's still married to him, midrabbanan, because he took her back, midrabbanan. But where it gets interesting, says the Mishnah, is like this. Suppose the original marriage of the child was done by her father. Now that's a Kedushin d'oraisa, right? When he is megarish this child, the father loses all rights to subsequent marriage, and she becomes what is known as we've seen many times, a yitoma b'chayei aviha. So she is, technically speaking, a little orphan girl, even as her father is taking her skiing, right? There's a poor little orphan girl. So now the father does not have rights to be a mekabel kedushin. Now let's say that she gets married to him a second time. The first time was the oraisa. The second time was the rabbana. Now he goes and dies. In this case, what happens at this point? So then, if she was still a ketana, she became a yitoma b'chayei av, the moment that she was begureshet. The second marriage does not exist as far as the Torah is concerned. So how does the Torah define this woman? As a man's divorcee. And therefore the man's brother, if that man dies, obviously can't marry her, right? Because she's not even married to his brother Midiraisa. So there's nothing to discuss in this case. Here, everybody would agree that since the real marriage, when I say real marriage, I mean the marriage Midiraisa, the real marriage terminated in divorce, that's the permanent status. Any change subsequently was only a change to Rabbanan because of the fact that she was Yitoma B'chayei Av. In this case, everybody agrees. Of course, there would be no one. Even the Tana Kama would agree. In this case, there's no second marriage, Midiraisa. And since, okay, if the whole thing was Darabbanan, then we could simply take the way we would have looked at it, Darabbanan, and apply it to the Darabbanan. But over here, there was a real marriage, Darabbanan, when the father married her off. And then when she became Yitoma B'chayei Av, there was only Darabbanan, which from the point of view of the Torah, she's not even married. And therefore, of course, everybody agrees that she is Asura, Darabbanan, and this is a case of an Issur Karas, or she's going to Grusha Sachiv. Obviously, she is Asura to the Yavam. Now, our analysis of the Mishnah was actually based on Eifa. As Eifa pointed out, what is the logic behind Reb Elazar, who says that she is Asura if once she was divorced, even though currently she is married on the same level that she was initially married, either a D'oraisa, we're talking about a Gedela, or a D'rabbanan, where both marriages were after the death of a father, or after the legal death of her father. So the logic of Reb Elazar is that since the moment that she is defined as Grushat Achi vis-a-vis him, she became a Erva. If that's the case, why does she need Chalitza? If she's really an Erva, then there's no Chalitza either, is there? I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, of course, she does not need Chalitza. Isn't that the whole point? No, it's not. Because V'chitei Malchanami, how do we explain that in the Braita they quote Rabbi Elazar as saying that she does need Chalitza? Oh, Ela Amar Eifa. So what Eifa actually said was, I don't really know. I don't understand Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar Lo yadana mai taima. That's what Eifa ended up saying. So that means we have to explain Rabbi Elazar. It's inconsistent to say on the one hand that it was Nisrim Rishonim Apilim, and therefore she's defined permanently as a Grushat Achiv, and on the other hand to say she needs Chalitza. Make up your mind. If you hold there's a Chiv Karet, then there's obviously no Chalitza. Says Abaye, look, we have to tweak Eifa a little bit. But the approach is basically correct. The problem with Rabbi Elazar is that he is not sure. Not sure about what? He's not sure whether Nisuim Rishonim or Mapilim, or whether the moment of death of the brother is what's mapil. So he was mesupik, whether mita mapelet or nisrim arishonim mapilim. So because of that, he says, look, if it's mita, that's mapelet, so then she really is chayevet in yibam. If it's the nisrim arishonim, she's petura even from chalitza. Since I don't know what to do, then basically give her chalitza, because you're not doing anything wrong. But make sure that you don't chas v'shalom give her yibam, because that may end up being an iser karet. That's the point. Rava says, you don't make a tana misupak in what the din is, where he's telling you it's straight out. It's pshita l'Rabbi Elazar de mita mapelet. Actually, we do not tweak Eifa. It has nothing to do with what Eifa said. Rabbi Elazar holds that this woman is chayevet in yibam. And that's why he says you need chalitza. The only reason that we said don't do yibum, even though she's really chayevet in yibum, is because people love scandals. That's why. So everybody knows she got divorced, but everybody's got to talk about why they got divorced. It's everybody's business why they got divorced. But not everybody knows that he took her back, do they? So Akobiki and Begerishin, but ain't I called Pekin Bechazara? That's not like so scandalous. I mean, gosh, the scandal ended up with their going back together. What a shame. So now, okay, says the Gemara, on the contrary. Divorce is a one-time thing, right? I mean, if they got back together again, so then people see them living together as man and wife for years, maybe. So Kivan de Yatvatu, I mean, she's living with him. So obviously the word gets out that they got remarried. Yeah, says the Gemara, the word gets out. That's true, maybe even in 99% of cases. But let's imagine a case where this guy realizes one evening that he really loves his ex. So he goes and he takes her back and they go out for a wonderful honeymoon, and that night he drops dead. What about that? Does anybody know that they got remarried? No. If we're going to allow her to get yibum, people are going to say, what? Weren't they divorced? Gosh, I guess there's a chiyuv of yibum even on a divorcee. We can't have that. So it's a gezeira. We have to include all possible cases in the gezeira, right? So because of that, we answered it. And therefore, we were milo askinah. Are we not talking about, even in a case where the guy married her at night and was dead by the morning? So because of that, Rebbe Elazar answered it. Rav Ashi says, there's a very simple explanation. The explanation is in the Mishnah itself, hinted at right in front of your eyes, and you didn't even pick it up. The point is that the Mishnah actually speaks about a case where everyone would admit that if the original marriage was by daddy, and the second marriage was by mommy, or even by daddy, who was no longer recognized legally as daddy for marriage purposes, didn't you say that everybody is moda, that in that case, she, of course, cannot get yibum, and is not chayevet in chalitzochar, right? So says Rav Ashi, that's the point. Rabbi Elazar was concerned that if we're going to allow you to do yibum, which he really believes that you're allowed to do yibum, because as opposed to Eifa, I think that Rava's approach is correct. He really holds she is chayevet in yibum. But you know why she can't do yibum? Because what about confusing it with the case where everybody agrees that she cannot do yibum? So since in a small number of cases. The first marriage would have been derisive because of daddy, and the second marriage would have been a derabbanan. And in that event, if the guy actually goes out and does yibum, he's going to be over on an issachares. Therefore, says Rebbe Elazar, we can't allow people to do yibum under these circumstances because they're not smart enough to distinguish between the two cases. They only know she was married. They don't know difference, married derisive, married derabbanan. Because of that, we asser her across the board never getting yibum. But of course, she needs chalitza because of Mi'ikra Din. She was chayeves in yibum. So, hainu time of the Rebbe Elazar, the Gazar Hani, he assered all these other cases of remarriage, derisive, derabbanan, because of the Yitomah b'chayei av that was chozeret, where the first marriage is derisive and the later marriage was derabbanan. By the way, says the Gemara, well, of course. I mean, isn't that the point of the Mishnah? Why do you think the Mishnah has to mention something so obvious? The end of the Mishnah says, Minikhtani Seifa. The end of the Mishnah says, Ketana, Shisi Avia, Venizgarsha, becomes a Yitomah, Bechaye Avia. And therefore, if she's Nizgarsha, then he takes her back, Virzira. Everybody agrees that she's Asura. So, I mean, is there really any need to spell that out? Doesn't any idiot know that? Ask any kindergarten child what the din is if the first marriage was a deraisa, the second marriage was drabbana. Everybody knows that. It's pshita. It's a maila memra. I'll tell you what the point is. The Mishnah only said this to give you a hint at what Rabbi Elazar's logic was. Since this case is true, that's why Rabbi Elazar assert all cases of taking a woman back because of the single case where the first marriage was deraisa and the second marriage was only drabbanan, which would have had massive implications for yibum. Would have asur be yibum. So you could be medayik from the Mishnah. El alava kamashmalan. The time of the Rabbi Elazar, the Gazar Hanach Mishum Hachi. Shmamina. So now we understand Rabbi Elazar. It was not what we thought. It was not a machlokas about whether nisuim rishonim mapilim. It was simply a question of whether we need to make a gzera in cases of different types of marriage, where the first is the deraisa and the second is the rabbanan. In fact, we have a raya to Ravashi from the actual braita that goes like this. Tanya kavasi Ravashi. And at that moment, she becomes Yitomah B'chayav. And then if he takes her back, V'chazira, that she is Asur L'Yavam. Why? Mipnei she'girusheha are a real Gerushin Midiraisa. They're Gerushin Gemuri. But Ein Chazarata, taking her back, was not a real remarriage. B'meh Dvarim Amurim. So when do the Chachomim say that we're made of, that she's asura to the Yavam, and that is kishigirsha kishiktana, virzira kishiktana, in the case where the second marriage was also while she was still a ktana, and therefore the second marriage was only a deraisa because he had taken off the rishus of the father. But if he was megarisha when she was a ktana, and then she grew up, and now he took her back, and now she's married to him again, midiraisa, according to the Chachamim, o choletzet o mityabemet. And Mishum Rebbe Elazar amru, the choletzet v'lo mityabemet. So we start off the braisa saying that the Chachamim are made to Rebbe Elazar in that case of Yitomah b'chayei av. Now that makes it seem that Rebbe Elazar was the one who paskened that and the Chachamim agreed with it. But there's no such halacha. The only thing that Rebbe Elazar says is what he says afterwards, is the machlokas with the Chachomim in a case where she was not in that case, in a case where she grew up. So that means that the only purpose of mentioning that opening was to explain what the entire conversation revolves around. It revolves around the issue of whether we have to be chayshish for that case. Gershi, Zoom has brought you back right next to Gavi, and you can now appear. So, boy mine Rava mi Rav Nachman. What would be the din in this case? According to Reb Elazar, can the tzara be actually taken b'yibum? Because now we're saying we're only assuring the woman herself because we're worried about the case where the first marriage was a deraisa, the second marriage was a derabbanan. So how about in the case where that's not the problem and there's a tzara involved? Would we paskin, would you be so makbid that you would say that the same way that we asur her for yibum because of this chashash, we would even asur a tzara for this chashash or not? Omar Leiser, Reb Nachman said, of course not. He gufa gzeira. The only isser that we have over here of doing yibum was because the gzeira, maybe people will get confused in the confusing a case of a second marriage, which is the oraisa, to a case where the first marriage was the oraisa. So obviously, we're not going to extend this even to the case of the tzara. That's crazy. Says the Gemara, but the Braisa says not like that. The Braisa says, that Reb Elazar said, he vitzarata or choletzet. Now, what do you think that means? I mean, let me explain to you. You can't ever need both of them to do chalitza. So how could it mean that? Both of them? Both of them need chalitza? So what the Braisa must be saying is either he or tzarata or choletzet, which implies that tzarata cannot be mityabemet either. And you're claiming that she can be because we're not going to make a gzera le gzera. Listen, man, don't try to bring me a raya from a braita where you needed to fix the language, okay? Because if the language wasn't accurate, how inaccurate was it? You want to fix the braita? How about if I suggest the following fix? Because anyway, you got to fix. Okay, so take this fix. Teritzachi. Let the braita say, he choletzet, but sarata o choletzet, o mityabemet, haha. So don't try to bring a raya against me from an inaccurate braita. Fine. Which brings us right back to
Esther.
Thank you. Now, at last, we get back to one of the Mishnayos that has been with us all along. We had this problem. We keep referring to this Mishnah again and again. And that was the case where we end up with two brothers married to two sisters, one of whom is a katana and can be mima enet. Here we go again. And the other one is a gedola. And now the question is, what do we do in the event that one of them falls to yibum? How do we handle the death of the brother who's married to the gedola in the event that the yovam is married to the ketana? So this raises all kinds of issues. First of all, it raises the issue of whether the miyun, the subsequent miyun, which remember we spoke about always before, in the event that she would be mima enet now, would that now go ahead and say that, well, the brother that currently is the yavam was never married to this girl because now she renders that marriage null and void? And if that's the event, would we actually encourage her to do miyun? Would we allow the two marriages to remain intact? That is, one marriage of the older sister, which is now in a state of Shomeret Yavam, right? Because the brother died. And the other brother is married to the Ketana. Can those states be concomitant states? Why not? Because it depends what your opinion is of Zika. This is how we got involved in Zika Nisuin Osa or not back at the beginning. If you hold that the existence of Zika is the equivalent of a marriage, then how can this Yavam remain married to the little sister of his Zekuka Leyiba Midyaraisa if she is Achot Zekukato, which makes her the equivalent of Achot Isha? And let's assume that Miyun would work. So would we encourage her actively to do Miyun? All of these questions, remember, we dealt with before, or at least most of them, by bringing up this Mishnah. Here we're finally, this often happens, that by the end of the Masechet, we finally get to the Mishnah that has been this rich source all along, because we're getting to the bottom of the issues. So here's the question. Let's start off easy. You've got two brothers married to two sisters. Let's assume that both of these marriages were with Durabonans. They were Kedushay Miyun. The father had died, or they were both Yitomot B'chayei Av. The mother married off for two little girls. One of the brothers dies, and what happens over there? So in that case, if one of them dies, the other ones, Teitzei, it shouldn't say Halizu, the Gros says, just Teitzei Mishum Achotisha. Obviously, a Kedushin Durabonan on both ends is the equivalent of the Kedushin D'Oraisa. So if the Raisa, they would have been married to two sisters, then there wouldn't have been Yibam. So Rabbanan are not going to change that by the Rabbanan being married to two sisters. The same thing would be true in the event that you had two sisters who were Charashot. So the Rabbanan over there also had provided marriage for a Charashet, even though there is not a D'Oraisa there at all. So it's exactly the same case. The Rabbanan simply took the D'Oraisa, like in the previous Mishnah, and would apply it as if they were married mid-D'Oraisa. Now, we get into trouble where one of the brothers was married mid-D'Oraisa because she was a gedola. The other mother is only married mid-Rabbanan, and there had not been a father. So she was a ketana. Then what happens? Well, if the ketana's husband dies, then there's really no problem, because then, obviously, she is Achot Ishto, Midiraisa, of the Gadol, the one who's married to the Gedola. So forget it. She just goes free. There's no Yibam. There's no Chalitza. But what about in the other event? What if the husband of the Gedola died, and now the Gedola falls to the husband of the Ketana, who is his brother? Now, in that case, we certainly cannot say that there's no chiyuv of Yibam, because the older daughter, the older sister, was married D'Oraisa. The younger sister is married only D'Rabbanan. Obviously, an Isser D'Rabbanan is not going to cancel a chiyuv D'Oraisa of Yibam. On the other hand, he is married to her, mid-Rabbanan. He can't possibly be married to both of these sisters at the same time. What is he to do? So we have three approaches to what to do. Rabbi Eliezer says, look, the most logical thing is somebody should give a lollipop to the little girl and tell her that she'll get one lollipop a day for the rest of her life if she's willing to do miyun. Okay, so get us out of the pickle. Take the easy way out. Encourage her to do miyun. Then she annuls her marriage. She was never married to this husband who now goes up and takes his brother's wife as a good boy is supposed to do. That's a simple solution, says Rabbi Eliezer. That way he can do Yibam with this sister that falls to him. Rabbi Gamliel says, you don't encourage her to do Yibam, to do Miyun, because it's not really a problem. It's not? No. If she does Miyun on her own, fine, that's great. He can go ahead and he can marry B'Yibum. He marries the sister, like Rabbi Eliezer says. We don't encourage her to do Yibum because currently she can remain married to him. How can she remain married to him if he also has an Zikuka to him? Oh, because if you hold that Zika is really not enough to be the equivalent of a marriage, so what's the big deal? She'll wait. Let's say this girl is 10 years old. Fine. So when she becomes 12 years old, at that point she will be married to him, D'Oraisa, and then the older sister can go out and marry somebody else, because now she is his Achot of Ishto Midiraisa, and therefore she becomes Potter. Now, there's two very important issues here. One is, Bobby, I think you're falling asleep. Yes. So one issue is that are we saying that a marriage that comes after the Zika was already chal, at the time that the husband died, for all intents and purposes, the one who was married to the younger sister, the Ketana, the Yovan, Midiraisa, that marriage is not recognized. So what is the status, Midiraisa? She's a Yavama, the older sister, right? Now what Rabbi Shmuel is saying, Rabbi Gamaliel is saying remarkably, is that if subsequently she ends up growing up and is now married to the brother, we cancel from this point forward, we cancel the Zika. Can you do that? Let's imagine a case like this. A guy is a Yavam. He does not want to marry his brother's wife. So he goes ahead and he marries her mother, or he marries her sister. Now, so do we say, well, I guess you don't have to do chalitza, you don't have to do yibum, because now you're married to an erva? That's what Rabbi Gamliel is saying. Rabbi Gamliel is saying that when subsequently she grows up, now she's an erva, and from this point forward, we can cancel the zika that was there before. So that means there's really two very important considerations in what Rabbi Gamliel is saying. A, that we do not view the zika per se as being enough to asser the brother who's married to this little girl just because he has a sister that is a kuka. So that means you're saying openly, zika is not like a marriage. And B, in the event that there is a marriage later, you can now cancel the zika, which is not like a marriage, but it's still a zika that's b'chai of you to get married. You can cancel that because currently you are married to her sister. There we go. That's Rabbi Gamliel Shita. So if she does mion, very nice. V'imla, but if she doesn't do mion, so wait until she grows up. And then at that point, teitzei alezu b'shum achot isha. Then the other one, the gedola, the sister, is now able to walk away because now she's achot ishto. The third approach is Rabbi Yoshua's approach. Oy vey, says Rabbi Yoshua. There's nothing to do. This is a total disaster because he's going to have to divorce his own wife. What? Yes, because she's a chotz kukato. He is no longer allowed to keep his sweet little girl as a wife. Oh my gosh. Why? Because what's he going to do? He's going to give chalitza. He has to do something. He has to get rid of the zika, because the zika is enough to answer him, because zika is kiknus adamya. If he gives chalitza to the older woman, the sister, he nonetheless has to get rid of his little girl, because now she's a chot chalutzato. A disaster. The poor guy is locked out on both ends. So he has to give chalitza to Eshet Achiv, because, I mean, he can't just go ahead and do yibum, because midrabbanan, he was married to her sister. So he has to do chalitza. But if he does chalitza, then he anyway is going to be usher forever on the little girl. He loses both lovely sisters. Okay. Says the Gemara, let's take a look at the Sfara for Rabbi Eliezer. We should tell her, do mion, and then everything will be fine. I thought that it's a very bad idea to be involved in mion at all. Because Mishari, is it mutter to tell a little girl to walk out on her husband? V'atani bar kapara. L'olam yidbak adam b'shlosha dvarim v'yitrachek b'shlosha dvarim. If you're in a position of authority, so then, or even some of these, if you're not in a position, you're still in authority over yourself, three things that are nice to stick to and three things get away from. Yidbak b'shlosha dvarim, always do chalitza, not yibum. Always take advantage, number two, of hava'at shalom. Don't get involved in fights. Try to bring peace and compromise to situations. And what you should always do is try to get rid of nedarim instead of being mekayim nedarim. Three things you should get away from. Just get away from miyun. We don't want. There's even Rabbeinu Hananel, which is very problematic. Rabbeinu Hananel says, when we say get away from miyun, we mean get away from the marriage of little girls because they can lead to miyun, which of course is a big problem. It's the whole point that the Rabbanan made. So how can Rabbeinu Hananel say you shouldn't get involved in it? So Tosis explains that what this means is that the Rabbanan only recommended the marriage of a ketana where we know for a fact that she's being taken advantage of. But if she's basically protected by family and so on, and she's not being taken advantage of, don't go out of your way to create a situation that may require miyun. That's how the Rabbeinu Chananel learns it. But also, lamaisa, it means that you don't want to take her away from her husband. That is, as again we saw in the previous Mishnah, that is something of a sense of promiscuity. You know, walk in with one guy, walk out, take another. This is not really appropriate, so stay away from miyun. Do not accept pikdonot. If somebody gives you his wallet and says, could you keep my wallet for me? Say no. We're going to go through these cases. And do not sign guarantees on loans. Oh, my God. That's a disaster. Okay, so anyway, we'll see why all of this. But the point is that miyun should not be done. So how is Rabbi Eliezer saying, let's encourage her to do miyun. We don't do that. Come on. I mean, there's a big difference between encouraging her to do miyun when it's going to allow us to do yibum and stop encouraging her to do yibum, miyun, because we don't like the husband. It's two completely different situations. Anyway, this is different. It's miyun de mitzvah. Now, let's just take a look at these things that a person is supposed to stick to. So, you said stick to chalitza. Now, sticking to chalitza would be going like Abba Shaul, remember? We had Abba Shaul before. Abba Shaul says, if somebody takes his Yavama for some ulterior motive, maybe she's very pretty, or maybe nobody's ever wanted to marry him, so he says, what the heck? I always needed to get a citizenship. They won't give me a citizenship unless I'm married. So, great, I'll take her, l'shem ishus, just to be married. Or whatever, for anything other than the mitzvah. L'shem davar acher, you might as well be sleeping with an erva, because ultimately, remember, we have this very delicate balance where the Torah answered a woman and then told you to take that woman. And therefore, you've got to use your brains, the contextual situation. So that's what you're saying. And Abba Shaul even went so far as to say that any offspring of that kind of yibum is for me. It's karav beinai liyota vlad mamzer. I mean, it's like the same idea, spiritually speaking. So, okay, that would be why you would say, stick to chalitza. You know, you think that you're such a great guy, or this guy is such a great guy. I mean, surely he doesn't have any ulterior motives. Yeah, okay, fine, great. It's safer to stick with chalitza. That's what you're saying. Then, hava'at shalom. Well, okay, that's understandable. It says, bakesh shalom v'rodfeyu, and rodfeyu really shows the power of bakasha shalom, because there's a gzera shava of redifa to redifa. It says over here, bakesh shalom v'rod feyu, uchtivas rodev tzedakah v'chesed yimtza chayim tzedakah v'kavod. So that means if you are going to seek shalom, then you're the same as being rodev tzedakah v'chesed, in which case you will get a zechus in olam haba of chayim and tzedakah, and you will get a zechus in olam hazeh of kavod. So obviously, this is a major thing to be mizdabik to, and try to get rid of Nedarim. That is going like Rabbi Natan, as we've seen many times. The Tanya Rabbi Natan Amara Noder Ki Ilu Bana Bama. And so you might as well build a Bama. What is a Bama? A Bama is your own approach to bringing Karbanas. You don't want the Beit HaMikdash. Note this for all those involved in thinking about Churban projects. You don't want a Beit HaMikdash. You want a Bama. Take a look at the reaction when B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven built that Mizbeach. Oh, my God, a civil war. We could have lost hundreds of thousands of lives. So you want to go ahead and do the same thing. What? Yes. The Torah tells you how to act, but you've got another vision. So you don't want the mitzvah of Torah. You want to do things your own way. That's the pshat of making a neder. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never said this is usur. Now you're coming along and making it usur. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never said this is a mitzvah. Now you're coming along and making a shvuah. You make it a mitzvah. What kind of business is that? So that's the equivalent of a neder. And therefore, hamekaimo ki'ilu hikriva la korban. So then it would be even worse. If you're mekayim it, then it's shchut echutz, it's Allah echutz. What do you mean mekayim this thing for? It's bad enough that you thought about it and building it. Okay, so therefore, better to get rid of that neder. And now, what you said before was that there are three things you don't want to get involved in. You don't want Mion. You know why you don't want Mion? Okay, be real. You went ahead and you persuaded this girl to leave her husband. You know, she was 12 years old, reasonably happy in marriage. Now she's 25. She never got married. She hates your guts, okay? She's very sorry she did Mion. I mean, this is crazy. Were you getting involved in that kind of issue? So obviously, Dilma Gadlon Mischartabar, she's going to be very upset that she ever did that Mion. And then there's going to be a whole question of how it is that she is going to relate to the whole thing. And it's even worse, according to some Rishonim. What if she did marry another guy? And she really ends up being attracted to her first husband, who now, because of the same Krit Sotav and so on, is going to try to persuade her to mess up her real marriage so she gets to get, so she can go back to him, because he'll say, well, I wasn't really married to her because she was Bama, and so on and so forth. Okay, fine. The other thing is, do not accept people's wallets. Why? Because no good deed goes unpunished. And therefore, if you were kind enough to keep his wallet for him, and he comes in and you take his wallet and you put it, yeah, okay, no problem at all. You open up your kitchen drawer, put his wallet in the back and close it, okay? Now this guy, if he lives in your neighborhood, he comes around to your house, he's your good friend, you're sitting and drinking coffee together, and you say, one sec, I need the bathroom. You walk out for one sec. He runs over to the drawer, takes his wallet out. 2 weeks later, he comes back. Hey, Joe, could you give me back my wallet? Sure. Joe opens up the drawer. No wallet. Oh, gosh, Joe, you were supposed to take good care of my wallet. I mean, there was $3,000 in that wallet. Don't get involved in this kind of situation. And therefore, we're talking about over here, Bibar Mata. This is a guy that lives in your neighborhood. You don't want him to be coming into your house. Okay, that is one approach. Okay. Mina Eravon, do not be a guarantor. What kind of guarantor are we talking about? We're talking about an Eravon Sheltzion. The Sheltzion, some say, is just a corruption. Others say it's a word. It's a place which is based on a word. And that is Shlov Dots, as we're going to see in a moment, because as Rabbi Yitzchak would say, what is the meaning of the pasuk that says in Mishle, oh my gosh, Raye Roach, Yarav Zar, it's going to be one bad thing after another if you gave a guarantee for somebody else. And if you are smart, then you're going to get away from this Sonei Tokim. If, now here, note the language of Tokim, because Tokim in Hebrew is dotes in Aramaic. So dotes means to stick something in. Tokea is to stick something in. Shalof is to take something out. And therefore, what we're talking about over here is ra'ah achar ra'ah tavolu mekabel. One shot is ki orav zar. You brought in people who were not Jewish into Klal Yisrael. Or a Rav Zar, you made yourself a guarantor to people, Sheltzion. What is that? We'll see. And it also means the people who hate the one who is Tokeah, Sonei Tokim, is Boteach. What is that referring to? That is talking about keep yourself away from Tokea Atzmo L'dvar Halacha. You get connected to a halacha that you believe in and know nothing about. There's lots of people who do that. Oh, well, I learned. Yeah, right. You know what you're talking about. So let's go through all of these three things. So, Mikable Gerim, you said, Arev Zar. That's one understanding. You mixed in strangers. That is referring to Rabbi Chalbo's famous drush, the Amr of Chalbo, Kashim Gerim Lisrael, Kisapachat Ba'or, because it says the Lushan of Sifachini or Nispach to Yisrael. Now, again, as we learned, as Tosis makes clear over here, this is talking about people who go out to encourage Gerim. So they think they're doing a great job being missionaries for Klal Yisrael. That's the last thing that you want. It is not referring to people who are dealing with others who are dying to become Gerim. and are convinced that these are gay. Obviously, if you put them through the hell that the Rabbanut does, or if you put them through the difficulties that Rut did to Naomi, so fine, then there's no chashash at all. But even as Tosis points out, the case of Hillel, where, I mean, the guy was being outrageous, so why not just throw him out of the house? I'll become a ger if you teach me kol ha'Torah kul ha'regalachas. Get out of here, which is what Shammai did. So that means, according to Beis Hillel, even that, because, as Tosis explains there and here again, that Hillel was convinced that this guy was for real, even though he had every reason to throw him out of the house, that you use your brains in deciding who is a bringer of resources to Klal Yisrael, as opposed to being Ma'ariv Zar. So it's always a question, of course, in the context. Rabbi Chalbo is just saying, be very careful. And what is a guarantor of Shalzion mean? That's the Shalov Dotz guy. That's the type of guarantee that they used to use, if that place is a place, that they used to actually use in that place, which is Shalof, get away from the borrower, and Dotz, get after the guarantor. So if it's a kind of location where a guarantor is not a secondary possibility for payment of a loan, but he's actually, this other language of dotes is screw the guarantor, shlov dotes, right? So if that's the case, then you're pretty stupid to put yourself into that kind of position, because what if they go after you? You can't rely on the fact that the other person you know has enough money to pay the debt, because they'll say, well, you know, you're easier to get to, so we'll go after you. Total disaster. And the third thing was, a guy who gets tokeya atzmo, he is like sticking himself onto halacha. What does that mean? The tiny Reb Yossi Omer. Kol Omer in lo Torah, in lo Torah. Pshita, I don't understand. A guy is saying, I don't learn. Well, okay, if you don't learn, you ain't going to get any schar for learning. That's rather obvious. No, no, what he said was, kol ha'omer ein lo ela Torah. If he says, I like learning, but I'm not too big on doing mitzvahs. Okay, so then he's only going to have learning. that's also pshita. If he doesn't do mitzvahs, how's he going to have the mitzvahs? Sorry. What Reb Yossi actually says is that if he says, I only have the theory, but I don't get into the details of doing it, so then afilu Torah enlo. Why? My time, Amr of Papa, because it says in the Pasuk, the two things are interrelated. Ulmadetem va'asitem. Only if you're involved in the asiya are you part of the limud. Yeshno belimida. But koshe ino basiya. So there's no learning. Or you know what? Wait a minute. Reb Yossi, what Reb Yossi said initially is kol ha'omer ein lo ela Torah. That could be also make sense, because what it could be referring to, you said it's obvious, right? Ein lo ela Torah. You know why it's not obvious? Is because suppose this guy becomes a very famous lecturer, you know, and wherever he goes, he persuades people to become Jewish and do mitzvahs and everything, and they take him more seriously than he takes himself. So you might think, if the guy is learning and he's got such an impact on people, so he gets schar for their mitzvahs, right? Therefore, kamash melon, no. In this event, he gets no schar for the mitzvahs at all, because he set himself up as not doing mitzvah. Or maybe there's another pshat, tokei atzmo l'dvar halacha. Tokei atzmo l'dvar halacha doesn't mean he prevents himself from acting the halacha. He just learns the halacha. Maybe he means like this. It's talking about a rabbi. The rabbi learned a case that seems very similar to the case that he now has in front of him. So it's osidina l'kameh v'gomar halacha. He learned halacha. Now it seems to him that this case is basically the same idea. So he's going to apply the case that he knows, he's going to apply to this case. Now, as you know, having learned Yevamos, cases that look precisely the same may have precisely opposite dinim because of some absurd little issue that you never would have dreamt of until you went through the Gemara. So if this guy figures, yeah, you know, life is simple. I mean, It's the same case. There were two girls, two sisters that were married, and they said that we should get rid of one. And then, you know, this is basically the same case. The father married the first daughter, and then she got married again. You know, I mean, like, what do you know? Yeah. So if you've got, so you're saying, okay, I mean, obviously the guy can't be that dumb. That's true. But if he has an opportunity to discuss this issue with someone that he had learned it from, in Islay, he's Madame Milta LaMilta, and Islay Rabba, he's got somebody that has taught him, he could discuss it with him, but he's so sure of himself. That's Tokea Atzma. He's sure of himself. I learned it. Yeah, 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 that's it. And he's ready to open up his fat mouth because he once learned something. He doesn't even bother to go talking with somebody to discuss it. That is an idiot. And he is really killing himself because, as Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni Omar Rabbi Yonatan said, listen, if you're a judge, you should always imagine yourself as standing right there with a sword on your neck. Now, the Lashon over here is a sword between your legs. I'm not sure which one is more scary, but either Lashon is pretty bad. So you do not want that sword to be moving. And not only that, but you're suspended over hell. Gehenim p'tuchalo mitachtav. Take a look at Shlomo HaMelech. He may mitato shel Shlomo shishim giborim savivla migiborei Yisrael mipachad balelot. What do you think that's referring to? These people are the giborei Yisrael. Those are the ones that are holding their chagor charbecha yerach gibor. They're all sitting there with their swords for milchamta shel Tera. He's scared to his death, Shlomo, to give a halacha without analyzing it with all of these advisors who are all tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. And it says, mi pachat balelot. You know what's lelot? That's the fear of hell. There's no deeper night than that. So this guy, he doesn't think that Shlomo HaMelech has got anything to be afraid of. I know the halacha, ha, ha, ha. And there he goes, falling down just as Korach did, straight into hell. And then we said, Rebbe Gamliel says, if she went ahead and gave miyun, that's fine. But if she doesn't, they can remain married. Why? Why doesn't she have to go out? Bishum de kasavre. So Rebbe Lezer says, there's possibilities here, and I don't know what they are, says Rebbe Lezer. It's bishum de kasavre. Kidushe ktana mitla talu. Is it because he holds that it's hanging there? I think Barnea wants to discuss the Tosfos that asks, why does it say 60 and not 70 if it's really referring to Sanhedrin? Tosfos says it may be Keneged Shishim Rebo of Yisrael. Fine. Anyway, is it because Mishum de Kasava Kiddushe Ktana is Mitla Tali? Basically, when you give Kiddushin to a Ktana, it can't be Chal now, but it then, when she grows up, it takes effect automatically without any further ado. And that would be true even if this guy never sleeps with her L'shem Kiddushin afterwards. Or is it only because he's saying now he got married to her because he slept with her L'shem Kiddushin? And even though this marriage comes after the Zika was already chal, if you go ahead and you marry a relative after the Zika came on you, you're still potter from Yibam. So Dilma Mishum de Kasava, Hamekadesh Achot Yivimto, Niftera Yivama Valchala, she can walk away, but that would only be true if he was Pael now in order to marry her now. It wouldn't just be a natural consequence of her growing up and now becoming married because of the original act of the Kedushin. Which one is it? Amalei said, Rav, I'll tell you which one it is. It's because he holds that if subsequently you went ahead and got married, we cancel even a pre-existing Zika. That's why. And therefore, only in the event that he actually was kainer her now, Ibal, yes. But if lo baal, lo. Amar of Sheshes, oh my gosh, that is a very stupid statement. Rav doesn't make stupid statements unless he's half asleep. I assume he was half asleep. Amina kinayim v'shochiv rav amalashmatz. He must have been half asleep when he said that because it makes no sense. Because it says, beferish in a brighter, amekadesh taktana kiddushah tiluyin. Somebody marries a girl, little girl. The marriage is in the air, basically. So we're waiting with a suspended judgment. Now, what does that mean, tiluyin? I mean, I'm assuming it means it's waiting there. And when she grows up, it now becomes real. And until then, we don't know, right? So how come Rav didn't understand that brayta? So he obviously is wrong. Lav ki gadla gadli bahada, the kedushin grows up with her. Afagav shalom ba'al. Amalei Rav Mebereta Reb Nachman, no. This brayta is telling us a psychological truth. And that is that if somebody marries a ketana, he's never really married to her because she has no confidence in this marriage, because she's thinking to herself, you know, what she's thinking is that milta, what it means is, milta ketana mitla talya v'kaima. The definition of her status is up in the air, because if he ends up sleeping with her, then she's going to be married to him. If he doesn't, she's not going to be. And she's saying to herself, you know, this whole thing is a mess. I mean, on the one hand, he's better than me because he can give me a divorce. I'm better than him because I can walk out on him. I don't know whether he's ever going to end up really taking me. Basically, now we're both in a state of maybe. I'm a maybe. Maybe I won't like him. I'll walk out. He's a maybe. Maybe he won't like me. He'll give me a get. I don't know. What kind of life is this for a poor little orphan girl? And so that's all that it's saying, that you're getting involved in a relationship which is iffy. That's all that it means.